This is Shirley Shorts, stories written and narrated by Shirley Hyatt. Today's story is from her collection, 20 Tales with a Twist.
Secrets. The letter, addressed in my brother's flamboyant hand, had been steamed open and resealed by our overly intrusive housekeeper. Of that, I was certain. His message had been written in our own special code, so she would not have gained anything. The meaning would only have been clear to me. There had never been any doubt that Dylan would not have a long life. It was only a matter of timing. No male on our father's side had lived past the age of 30. Dylan was 28. Now he had silently succumbed to his destiny, the awareness of which had hung over him all his adult life. There would be no male heir unless I bore one, and time was running out in that department. Dylan's departure had brought that truth home. On the flight from San Francisco to Boston, I'd had plenty of time to ruminate on my future, and especially that of our beloved family home. As the plane landed, I began to worry anew that in the last days, Dylan may have given in to the housekeeper's prodding. I knew that she had begun to question him regarding certain happenings in our house, but I was sure he hadn't revealed the secret we two had shared down the years. Oh, God, I didn't need her popping up when the will was read, insisting my brother had not been of sound mind, or worse, produced some contrived paper declaring herself as deserving of a piece of the estate. I wouldn't put it past her. I was surprised to find that although Dylan and I had planned everything very carefully, I worried that something might go awry. I paid off the taxi, went up the broad steps, and fitted my key in the lock. Putting my suitcase down in the hall, I opened the French doors that gave onto the living room. The patterned rugs were still soft under my feet, although between the dining room and the kitchen, years of traffic had begun to wear away the pile. Taking in a deep breath, I realized that I loved everything about the room, including the chintz curtains and matching slipcovers on the overstuffed chairs. In the fall, these soft cotton prints would be removed, packed away until spring cleaning time, when they would once again work their light-hearted transformation on the formal shapes and darker colors. It was a tradition set down by our ancestors, a sign of the passing of one year into another, and I would see to it that the chain would not be broken. I sat down, put my feet up, and ran my gaze over the carved mirrors and family portraits done in oil. I was physically tired, my mind was buzzing, and I needed to clear it. Forcing myself out of the chair, I went into the kitchen to make a good strong cup of coffee. Nothing there had been changed, thank God. The jar of beans was still in the right place, second shelf on the pantry, and the grinder was stowed in the lower cabinet where it had always been. I got to work putting water on to boil, settling the filter in the cone atop my favorite cup. The kettle whistled. As I reached for it, I realized my hand was shaking. Surely, I thought, the details that Dylan and I had so carefully put in place on my last trip home would not have been tampered with by that prying woman. She always had the look of a cat about to catch its claws into me. I felt a little clutch inside my chest, but shook it off. After stirring in a teaspoon of honey, I took a satisfying sip of coffee and thought again of my darling brother and wondered, had he lived anything approaching what one would consider a full life? He hadn't been outside the gates in at least 10 years, not since mother and father had gone, but then, by whose standards might his years be measured? Certainly, one could not compare him to anyone else. To my mind, Dylan seemed to have managed very well. What he lacked in physical strength, he more than made up for by being absolutely brilliant. And although he was far above me in natural spiritual talent, Dylan and I had made an agreement that when he left this earthly existence, I would call to him and he would hear me, an answer from a dimension most people could neither see nor hear. With this remembered assurance, I felt my own spirit stir within me and took in a deep breath. "Dylan," I said, "Dylan, dear, "It's Olivia." But instead of a quiet response from my brother, I heard the sharp sound of the brass lion's head hitting the front door. My first thought was that the housekeeper would answer the rude knocking, but of course, I had notified her that she was no longer needed. I had no desire to deal with anybody, so I stepped softly into the dining room and peeked out through the draperies. Oh, darn it. It was Mrs. Faber, the former housekeeper. I realized it had been foolish to think I could escape dealing with her face to face. She had obviously wanted to give me her house key in person rather than slip it through the mail slot, as I had suggested on the telephone. Surely she was here to press me for details about the will. I was convinced she saw herself as the beloved family retainer who deserved a share of the family fortune. Greedy, crazy old woman. Taking a deep breath, I decided to just get it over with and opened the door. "I knew you'd be here." Her words were a crisp accusation, as if I had no right to be in my own house. I lifted my chin. "Yes, I got in a short time ago. Thank you so much for bringing me the key." We both knew this was not the real reason for her visit. After she put the key into my outstretched hand, she strode past me. I followed, my blood starting to simmer. In the large kitchen, Mrs. Faber turned to face me. "I'm sure you are aware that I waited on your brother hand and foot for the past 6 years while you were traipsing around Hollywood." She clasped and unclasped her thin hands as she stared at me. My cheeks burned, but I determined that I would not defend myself against her silly remark. To her, any place in California was Hollywood. I forced a smile. "Mrs. Faber," I couldn't keep my voice from rising, "my brother was fully capable of taking care of himself until the last few days of his life. Please don't try to insinuate something that clearly was not in the agreement we made with you. You were hired to take care of the house with the bare minimum of obligation toward Dylan. There was a nurse with him toward the end, as you are fully aware." "Humph, that shows what you know." She took a step toward me. "I fetched and carried for him all the time. You weren't here to see what was happening, so don't get smart with me." I reined in my desire to smack her. I'd always known the woman was conniving and self-serving, that she saw herself as the head housekeeper of a large staff, when in truth, most of the rooms had been closed up for years. When I was away, she took charge of a 20-room house in which only 4 were in use. I was certain she saw me as the interloper who had come to snatch away her inheritance. The gleam in her eye felt threatening. I glanced toward the cutting board and was relieved that there were no knives in view. It took all my energy to feign a softening toward her, to put out my hand and lay it gently on her arm. "Look, I'm sorry if we got off on the wrong foot. Of course, I know you were very fond of Dylan and felt as upset as I do at his passing. I let you know just as soon as the lawyer notifies me, okay?" She sighed suddenly. "Dylan was such a dear boy. I felt terribly sorry for him, that he couldn't run around like any other child. He was always with a book in his hands, or busy working a puzzle. Sometimes we played chess together. I'll bet you didn't know that." "No," I said, "I didn't." It was true. I had never pictured her in that role, and doubted she was telling the truth. First of all, Dylan was hardly a boy or a child. He was a grown man, for Pete's sake. She went on. "And sometimes he would ask me to read to him, you know, when his eyes grew weak." She sighed again. "Such a lovely boy. He must have been awfully lonely. Sometimes as I was busy with some task, I could hear him talking to himself." I could see where this was going, and I had to put a stop to it. There was no way I would get anywhere near the subject of spiritual communication. "Please, Mrs. Faber, I'm afraid I'm very tired. I've had a great loss, and the plane trip was tiring. I need to rest. I'll call you as soon as I have been notified regarding the reading of the will." "You won't forget?" She drilled me with a steely gaze. "No, I won't forget. I promise. And by the way, thank you for the flowers and card you sent to the funeral home and for all the help and care you gave Dylan. This last bit of fake sincerity seemed to work. She offered me a tight smile and headed for the door. I closed it behind her and shot the bolt home. Stepping to the phone, I called the locksmith, gave my address and name, saying, "I need all the locks changed as soon as possible. There are 4 outer doors, and each will need a deadbolt." The few minutes of doing battle with that woman had been draining. I went back into the living room, threw myself into my chair to find the air, as well as my coffee, had turned cold. Looking around the familiar room, I felt the enormous weight of being alone in a new reality. I'd known this day would come, and now here it was. For the past few years, my brother and I had been the only people who knew exactly what went on in our house, that it contained a portal into another dimension. Dylan had the gift of second sight, but I would have to uncover my own latent talents. Hopefully, I had them. I already missed Dylan terribly, but when the tears rose up, I reminded myself that he was not really gone, that his essence would always be with me. It was up to me to keep the secrets of the house, especially from people like Mrs. Faber. Oh, that Mrs. Faber! The day I hired her, she had seemed just right for the job. A stern-faced, single-minded person who, for a few hours a day, would keep her attention on tidying up a few rooms and preparing simple meals for Dylan when I was away. During her interview, she had certainly fooled me. I had been overwhelmed by the response I'd gotten to my ad for a housekeeper. Women had lined up outside the front door, eager to see inside a mansion where so little was known of the generations who had lived and died in privacy. Our family had avoided making a splash in their shallow social pond, and they resented it. Among the circus of the curious, Mrs. Faber had seemed the least intrusive. Oh, well, as it turned out, she had truly caught me off guard. However, she had not fooled Dylan. He had been wise to her from the start. We two agreed that soon after hiring her, asking her to leave would only stir up all kinds of nonsense in the community. And so we had agreed to later let her stay on. I knew that many in our quiet town assumed our home was haunted, or worse. It was the architecture, the gingerbread, and the turrets that allowed their imaginations to go wild. There were whispers of murders and bodies buried in the cellar. It was that kind of crazy talk that people seemed to love. Dylan was a recluse, so naturally, it was rumored that he was insane. In order to meet airline schedules, I came and went at odd hours of the night. Ergo, I was suspected of removing body parts in my carry-ons. We had given up trying to make small minds believe we actually led anything like normal lives. We'd taken the low road and allowed prying Polly to remain. Somewhere along the way, she had adopted the weird notion that whatever else I was up to, I was in the movie business. I hadn't felt the need to explain my frequent trips to San Francisco. She didn't need to know that I had spent the last few years setting up an institute that dealt exclusively with studies dealing with the afterlife so that it could operate without my attendance. She need not be privy to the fact that with Dylan on the other side, our house would become my permanent place of study. Here I would communicate with those who had gone on before. At least that was my plan. First, I had to learn how to make contact with Dylan. It now dawned on me that I had allowed myself to become completely sidetracked. If I was going to get anywhere, I had to remove Mrs. Faber and everything else from my thoughts. Despite all my intellectual knowledge, I was still a novice. I closed my eyes and spent a few minutes clearing my mind. "Dylan," I said, "do you hear me?" Quite suddenly, I knew that I must go to a certain room on the second floor. I got the key from its secret hiding place and, climbing the stairs, was aware of a light touch on my shoulder. It guided me down the long hall to the door. I unlocked it and went in. My dear brother had not needed devices, but inside he had set up candles and mirrors and crystal globes to help me. I stepped across the room to pull down the shades where the last of the late summer sun was coming in through the tall windows. As I did so, I saw Mrs. Faber looking up at me. Evidently, she had been standing across the street, waiting to see if I would enter the rooms that had been locked away from her. I smiled and waved. "I'm such a fool," I said, turning away. I had to get rid of that woman. Until she was out of my life, she would continue to haunt me. I couldn't kill her, but at that moment I certainly wanted to. Whatever had possessed me to encourage the idea that she would be mentioned in a will? I finished pulling down the shades, but the spell had been broken. I gave up, went downstairs, and picked up the phone. "Tony, darling, it's Olivia. Will you do me a favor?" "Whatever it is, you only have to ask," he said. I relaxed. That was my Tony. "Well, it's the matter of Mrs. Faber. I believe we've got to pretend that Dylan's estate has bequeathed some money to her. Could you draw up an official-looking letter saying something befitting her past 6 years of service and include a nice check?" Tony said, "Something that would allow her to take a very long cruise?" "Yes, at least around the world a couple of times. I've got to put an end to that relationship. Would you call her into your office? I absolutely can't face her again." "Certainly. Is tomorrow too soon?" He laughed in a way that had always endeared him to me. "Tomorrow would be perfect. See you tonight? Just try to keep me away." I blew him a kiss and hung up, feeling greatly relieved. Tony was in love with me, and I loved him with all my heart. When we married, ours would not be a traditional union. He would move in with me, into a situation that would subject him to more raised eyebrows than his role as a first-rate attorney. He would be married to a woman many thought peculiar at best and evil at worst. Most of all, Tony would be privy to all Dylan's and my secrets. That was fine with him, and as he had said more than once, the rest of the world could just lump it. I went back upstairs, lit all the candles, and sat down with my hands hovering above the crystal globe. Before long, the air in the room grew chilly. Shivering a little, I said, "Dylan." I waited and then repeated his name. There was a flickering of the candles, and then I heard, "Welcome home, Livy. Let's get to work." The end.